I'm Marian McPartland. My guest today on Piano Jazz is Mulgrew Miller, one of the finest pianists in jazz. He has become one of the most acclaimed and recorded jazz players of his generation, and we're delighted to have him on Piano Jazz. Mulgrew, it's great to see you.
Thank you, Marian.
After all that long time.
It's been a long time.
Gee, but I know you've been busy. Your career is sort of ascending more and more. You've had a lot of great projects, and you've got a record called The Sequel.
That's right. On the Max Jazz label out of St. Louis.
Right. And I read somewhere your group, I didn't realize you had a group called Wingspan.
Yes, I recorded an LP, tell you how long ago that was, in the late 80s, called Wingspan.
Yeah.
And after that, I decided to keep the name for the group that appeared on the record. So it's a quintet that features alto saxophone and vibraphone.
Actually, that's a nice name for a group, Wingspan.
Yes. You know, that name happened because at the time I wanted to kind of pay tribute to the legacy of Charlie Parker, you know, who was also known as Bird. And so when I thought about the span of his legacy, you know.
That's a very cute idea. I guess I wouldn't have thought of that, but it makes a lot of sense. And obviously you are a great Bird fan like the rest of us.
Oh, I love Charlie Parker. The whole concept, you know,
yeah.
So innovative and exciting.
Boy. Well, I'd like to hear you play. How about a solo? Something. I don't know. What did you choose?
Sure. I'd like to play an old standard that was associated with Charlie Parker called Just Friends.
Oh, that'd be lovely.
Thank you.
I think that's a great tune to open the show with, because you love Charlie Parker so much, and that tune was such a big hit for him. When you were growing up, how soon did you get to hear his music?
Oh, I guess I was about, before I actually paid any attention to it, I was about 16 or 17, after I had discovered jazz through certain piano players. And then I happened upon a Charlie Parker record that really caught my ears.
Well, were you an only child, or how did you get started with the piano?
Well, I'm one of five.
Oh, you're not an only child.
And I'm right in the middle. And so my father bought a piano when I guess I was about six, and I just kind of started playing naturally by ear. Soon after that, church songs and hymns and things like that. And because I'm from a small town in the Delta in Mississippi, piano teachers.
Greenwood, is that right?
Greenwood.
Greenwood, Mississippi.
That's correct.
Boy.
And, piano teachers were not in abundance there.
I wouldn't think so.
So I had to wait a couple of years before we were able to find one. And I started studying in the third grade at 8 years old. And I studied with a man named Mr. Albert Harrison, who still teaches in the public school system there.
Fantastic. He's still in Mississippi?
He's still in Mississippi.
Oh, that's great. And he's going to hear you play, and he's going to be thrilled by what he did for you.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm thrilled for what he did for me.
But I imagine that you did sort of absorb all those gospel and church songs, too, when you were a little kid.
Oh, yes. They are part of my whole musical being. You know, they're big fibers in my whole musical being.
Well, how about if you play one of your own compositions?
Sure.
I would love that.
Sure. I wrote a song a few years ago entitled Carousel, and it's a waltz, and of course, in 3/4. And I guess it shows kind of a Bill Evans influence in the design of it. And I recorded it with my trio.
I'd love to hear it. Carousel?
Okay. Carousel.
Okay.
Thank you.
Oh, that's lovely. And you know, you can really get the feeling of an actual carousel.
Yes.
I mean, you really were wanting to get that in there, weren't you?
And to create a sense and a feeling of something going around and around.
Well, you did. Yeah. It was perfect.
Thank you.
I love that tune.
Yeah, and one device I use is that it never really cadences to a resolution until the very end.
Yeah. Yeah, I noticed that, but it's a very, very nice tune. And I read somewhere where you said you were changing your approach to composing, that you wanted to be more melodic or something like that. Did you say that?
I said something similar to that.
Well, it certainly seems like you're doing that.
Well, thank you. Yeah, that's, I wanted to get away from complexity for complexity's sake, and that's something I think a lot of us went through in our more youthful years. When I say we, I mean my generation of musicians and those younger.
No, it's true. As a matter of fact, you put that very well, complexity for complexity's sake, because I do hear things, and I think to myself, where are they going with this? Like, there's a massive, intricate harmony and syncopation and drum fills and all kinds of things, and you think, where is the actual tune?
Yeah.
And a lot of times there really isn't one.
Well, right, and sometimes it's hard to hear a story. So now I'm more interested in telling a story.
Well, that piece of yours, you definitely were telling a story, and it's certainly not lost on me. I could picture that little merry-go-round going around.
Oh, great.
Yeah, it was nice. Well, there's more to come with Mulgrew Miller. Our program is made possible in part by a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes that a great nation deserves great art. I'm Marian McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz from NPR. I also read somewhere where you didn't record for a few years. You decided not to record anything?
Part of it was my decision, and that decision was helped along by the record industry.
Oh.
So I just decided to take a break and relax and just play music with some of the, with all of the best musicians that I could get to play with me, or, who would invite me to play with them, and just have a good time and not have to worry about, recording contracts and, permission
and
to do
picking
this.
Picking tunes.
Yeah. And so just to have a good time playing music, But I needed to take some time to introspect and to look at where I was in my career and where I was in my own development. And so that was a time of great reflection for me.
And you've been known to say, easy does it, and I always like to hear that.
Yes. Well, that was kind of my very first philosophy in life, I think, a conscientious philosophy.
Well, that's one of the many good sayings in the AA, because Jimmy, my husband, was in AA, and I got to hear all these sayings, which are so good for everybody in everyday life. It could be anything from the way you play a tune to how you're going to spend your day or anything.
That's right. I mean, and I've found that it really works for me in dealing with whatever challenges I have throughout the day, to try to, stay calm and relaxed under all circumstances.
Well, you certainly seem to be doing that. How about if we try and do a calm and relaxed duet?
Okay, let's see if I can be as calm as you are.
Well, I don't know how calm I am until we start this thing, but this is a good old tune that I used to play years ago in club dates, Just in Time.
I love that song.
Good. Boy, we were beginning to be like Sonny Rollins there with that ending, you know, the never-ending ending.
Yeah, that's where the excitement builds.
right. But listening to Sonny, it's so funny because he'll, as I'm sure you know, he'll play a tune, and the tag will be longer than the tune.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you ever work with him?
No, you know, he's one of the few great saxophonists that I've never worked with. I've worked with every saxophone player that's been alive, you know, of the great, really
the
great
greats,
name,
yeah.
Saxophone, except for Sonny Rollins and Wayne Shorter.
Sonny, are you out there? I know he is. You know, I was just thinking that maybe I'd play a tune for you.
Wonderful.
And actually, this one isn't new. I wrote it, I think, before you were born at the Hickory House when I was working there. And it's called There'll Be Other Times. Thank you.
That was just absolutely gorgeous, divine, Marianne. You have a wonderful, just a beautiful way with ballads, like few that I've heard play the piano. You know, I think of Hank Jones and those kind of people, you know.
Thank goodness you're putting me in a category with him. But, you know, it's funny. I appreciate what you're saying. I do love to play ballads, and somehow that's developed to be a thing I like to do.
Yeah, I can relate to that.
And I'll play tunes with masochistic lyrics. You know, I get overly romantic playing it. I'm a fool to want you. So that one is a little more optimistic. There'll be other times. And so, anyway, I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah, I liked it very much.
And it's funny because when I did that tune, I remarked over the microphone, I said, gee, it would be nice if I had a lyric to that tune. And a woman came up out of the audience who actually was a lyricist from Vermont. And she wasn't well known or anything, but she did a really nice lyric for that tune.
Oh.
And it's funny, though, the way that happens. You don't expect something like that. You know, you say, oh, I wish I had a lyric. Somebody comes up and writes one.
Yeah, so, that you approve of.
That I approve of. Yes. Yeah, that has to be in there. Well, more in a minute. My guest is Mulgrew Miller. Our program is made possible in part by the Baldwin Piano Company, manufacturers of the pianos heard on Piano Jazz. I'm Marianne McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz from NPR. Well, tell me about another aspect of your playing. You do some teaching.
Yes, I teach privately in my home and do a lot of workshops and clinics and things like that.
So what do you tell the kids coming up?
Well, I tell them, I think the most important thing to their development is to learn how to listen.
So what do you give them any, like, records or something to listen to? Or?
Yeah, well, part of a private lesson includes some time to, you know, I'll put on a record and we'll listen. And I talk about listening on different levels. You know, I find that you know, you can listen on different levels. Sometimes you listen and you don't notice the details. You know, I have an interesting story about that. If you don't mind,
I want to hear it.
Well, after I came to New York, I was on a gig once, and I was playing the tune 4. And this was with one of the veteran musicians in New York. Clifford Jordan was on the gig. And so I was playing some changes that I had learned from a fake book. And they were not the original changes, you know. And although I had been listening to recordings of Miles playing 4, and they were playing the original changes, I just didn't listen beyond what was on the surface, you know. And so Clifford came over to me that night, and he said, you know, you're playing the wrong changes on 4. I said, really? And he said, yeah, you know, they are this, you know. And he showed me. And I said, wow, that's amazing. I've been listening to that record for years now. And I hadn't noticed that. And then I went back home, and I put the record on, and there it was, as plain as day, the changes that he was showing me. And what I learned from that is that I had not been listening deep enough, you know, in enough detail to get all of the proper things, you know. So that was a lesson for me. And one thing that I've noticed about great musicians, the greatest musicians are the greatest listeners.
Well, that's really good to hear, and I'm sure that's true, because how could they have developed their everything, you know, their harmonic ideas. Oh, well, I could really get into something, but what I was thinking was, now that you brought up that tune, Fall, wouldn't that be a good one to play?
It would be an excellent one to play.
And I hope that I'd be playing the right changes.
Yes, me too.
This, by the way, this tune was allegedly written by Miles, but he stole it from somebody, didn't he?
Well, yes, according to legend, the song was actually written by Eddie Clinghead Vinson, who was a saxophonist and blues singer.
So, well, I guess the manager, his pen slipped. he put the wrong name on the contract.
Yeah. Yeah, apparently he had a pension, no pun intended, for doing that.
Yeah. Oh, you did make a very good pun there. Wow. I don't hear that word too often. Well, let's have a go at Four. And you start, and I'll follow along.
Okay, I'll play a little intro, the last part of the tune, and go on from there. Thank you.
It's funny, I haven't heard that tune played much lately. It used to be sort of something everybody would play all the time. Mm-hmm. Have you noticed how tunes kind of come and go?
But yeah, those tunes, they come in and out of fashion, so to speak.
Oh, then you hear somebody play one, and you think, oh, that sounds good. I'd like to play that tune.
Yes.
Gee. Well, there's more coming up. My guest is Mulgrew Miller. Our program is made possible in part by the Friends of Piano Jazz. I'm Marian McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz from NPR. You know what would really be great, Mulgrew, would be if you would play another solo. I really love your touch and your choice of chords. What could you do?
I'd like to do a song written by Rodgers and Hart, and this is called Ship Without a Sail.
Oh, that's a great song, and nobody plays that. Oh, I'm going to really love that.
Yes, I've never actually heard anybody play it in person. I heard it on a recording by Ella Fitzgerald.
Oh, this is going to be nice. I'm going to love this. I not only loved the tune, but I loved hearing the verse. I didn't realize that there was a verse.
Yes, and I learned the verse from an Ella Fitzgerald songbook record. She did all of, you know, Cole Porter's tunes and Rodgers and Hart's tunes, and I was listening to that, and I said, "Oh, what a lovely verse," and it's short, you know. And,
yeah.
I think uncharacteristically for songs of that time, it only has one A section before the bridge.
Yeah, it does, and then it goes. That's the bridge, right?
Yes.
It's so nice. It's so, I mean, everything doesn't have to be eight and then repeat eight.
Right, that's right.
It doesn't
right.
have to
yeah.
be that.
And it doesn't sound like it needed another eight.
No, not at all. Not at all. Well, back to us. How about a duet, a Duke tune? Would you go for that?
Sure, I'd love to. You can't go wrong with Ellington.
So how about What Am I Here For?
It's a great tune, well, a fun tune to play on.
Let's play that.
All right. Thank you.
would have liked that.
I hope so. Yeah, it was fun. And I think Duke liked fun.
He did like fun, and I'm glad that I got to know him quite well, because when I was working at this club, the Hickory House, Duke would come in there all the time to eat, and he would leave his dinner and get up and play. Oh. He was something.
Priceless experiences.
Of course, I could go on like this all day, talking about different things and what fun it's been to have you come over and do piano jazz.
Oh, it's great fun for me, Mary.
And unfortunately, we only have time for maybe one more tune, so we could finish off with some nice, easygoing blues thing.
Great.
So we won't do anybody any harm. Cool Blues?
Yes, Cool Blues, written by Charlie Parker.
Oh, what a fitting way to end.
Yes.
Okay. To have the last word.
And of course you should.
You've been listening to Piano Jazz with Marian McPartland and our guest Mulgrew Miller. Join us each week at this time for another hour of conversation and improvisation from our Piano Jazz archives with Marian McPartland and her guests. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina ETV Radio. The producer is Sherry Hutchinson. Recording engineer, Duke Marcos. Assistant engineer, Dan Hoppler. Mastering engineer, David Mitchell. Production manager, David Lyon. Production intern, Adrian Stortz. Executive producer, Elaine Freeman. We love to hear from you. Our email address is pj@scetv.org. Our postal address is 1041 George Rogers Boulevard, Columbia, South Carolina, 29201. You can learn more about the artists and music on this series on our website, pianojazz.npr.org. Support for Piano Jazz comes from the National Endowment for the Arts, the Friends of Piano Jazz, NPR, the Baldwin Piano Company, and Borders Books and Music. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and NPR contributors, which include the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, presenting the MacArthur Award for Creative and Effective Institutions. Winners are at macfound.org. And the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, helping people build measurably better lives, on the web at hewlett.org. This is NPR.